So for the patient with a rising PSA after local therapy, the question obviously, if there's still a chance of treating the disease locally for cure, that should be offered. What we're really talking about, again, the interest as an oncologist, is preventing the development of metastatic disease, which is the point where mortality increases from prostate cancer, symptoms of the disease, or ultimately death from disease. So we can break this down, why treat, who to treat, how to treat, and how do we move forward. Local disease, obviously, if there's a possibility of cure and avoidance of androgen deprivation, particularly post-op radiation therapy, I would argue that's an important endpoint. What level of risk, again, is a discussion, and obviously you have to factor in the morbidity. We really haven't talked about salvage surgery, which is after radiation therapy, but we have not heard too much about the PSA anxiety issue in patients who know their PSA is rising and what its implications are in terms of their illness. And fortunately, we are getting a better handle on defining risk of metastatic progression in patients, in large part because of the prognostic models that have been discussed by many groups. So for the patient with systemic disease, that is no local disease, the issue is preventing metastasis or death from cancer. I, too, am a believer that the data support there are a proportion, albeit smaller, patients who are probably cured with androgen deprivation alone. And this is important in terms of our trial design because we have to build on something. Again, the patients who are watching their PSAs go up very quickly are generally not sitting around doing nothing. They want an intervention. And I think in this regard, it'll be very important to hear some of the discussions on intermittent therapy. But we also have to factor in the question of morbidity of systemic therapy for the asymptomatic patient. And I'll bring up a topic now. Again, I think a lot of it, there will be issues in terms of the experience of people using different chemotherapy regimens. When we were using MVAC early on, we had toxic deaths. Once we identified patients in whom that was a higher risk, we excluded them from our clinical trials and thereafter did not see toxic deaths as a complication of the therapy. So all of these have to be important considerations before taking a regimen forward, particularly in the multinational setting, and particularly when dealing with physicians who are not familiar with the regimens and their side effects. There is an experience that is important in how to use these regimens. Who are the patients who need treatment? Again, I'll give a slightly different slant to some of the data from Hopkins. The real question now is, do we understand the natural history of the patient with a rising PSA after surgery? I think the answer is that we are starting to. Again, on the surface, if you tell someone nothing's going to happen for 8 years, their interest in an intervention may be less than if you can identify someone who says, listen, you're likely to develop metastatic disease within 1 year. It's a very different clinical context. And I think an interesting thing, this is an endpoint that's very difficult to design around, particularly as patients know their PSAs. If they're going up, they generally are not going to wait until they develop metastatic disease that's visible on a scan. And this, I think, we have to consider in the reality of our trial designs, because while they may be scientifically valid questions, we have to address the practical issues of how we actually get these studies accrued and completed so we have more evidence in which to make our treatment recommendations. Again, you've heard a little bit from Dr. Friedland. In our experience, it may be that in a longer interval, you may have more accurate information from simply getting two data points. But I would also argue there are fluctuations in PSA. I would be very cautious in interpreting trials or reports which simply rely on two data points for the PSA doubling time calculation. And clearly, this is an area that we have to standardize, particularly as now we are designing trials around this endpoint. So I would say at this point that simply two values do not a doubling time make. And as well as you've heard, other factors have to be considered in the treatment decisions. You've heard about time to recurrence, and arguably there are factors related to the primary tumor, which will also ultimately be incorporated because we still don't know how much of an association there is between a doubling time and survival. So again, the type of information for patient counseling on the one hand and also for clinical trial design on the other. And each individual will be different in how they use this information. We've heard earlier there are some patients who may have a 10% risk who are interested in having the book thrown at their cancer. There are others who say it's 50-50 and they may not be interested in treatment. Again, this is a personal decision that can be made by the patient. And obviously in that decision has to be factored in what's the morbidity of the treatment that we are offering.